You got it?
There we go.
That is mostly Church of Christ Children's Ministers. We keep it as a secret group, not because we don't want people to be part of it, but we don't like spam. And we were getting a significant amount. So if you want to be part of that, Dina Jenkins, Harold, what's her last name? Harold Jenkins. She's like me. She uses all three names, and then I can't remember which one. Dina Jenkins, that's right. She is our Facebook administrator, and she started the page. And so she can add you. You can go find her. You can find me. Friend us. Just say, I want to be in the Facebook group, and then we'll add you in. And we just kind of do that for everybody's benefit. Also, September 28th through the 30th is the TABLE, which is a children's ministry conference that Summer, who's not in here, me, Stephen Bonner from LCU, Dina, and Josh Keller at Belton Church of Christ has put together to help equip children's ministers. We kind of noticed that we would all go out to these other conferences like CPC and all those things. We get bombarded with ideas, but we didn't really have somebody stepping in alongside us and kind of mentoring on what does children's ministry look like. And that's what we're trying to do with that conference. We keep it super cheap. It's going to be at Preston Road Church of Christ in the Dallas area. But it's easy, quick flight in. Southwest goes there, so you can look for deals. You pulling up my PowerPoint? So
it's called the TABLE, and I'll mention that again tomorrow.
Okay, and that I had a slide that I forgot to send to Marty. We got it made. We got it on the Facebook group. We did other things with it, printed postcards. Never sent it to you. Yesterday, while I was listening to Holly present, I was thinking about the first time I heard Holly's name. And I was talking to David Ray at ACU, who was my advisor through grad school. It was a long time ago, 10 years ago, 15 maybe. I think you had just finished maybe your dissertation at that point. And I was probably talking to him about small groups and children, most likely. And he said, well, of course, you've seen Holly Allen's research on that and read that, right? And I was, I don't know. So I've kind of followed Holly around ever since then. And, like, different conferences, everything I've seen that she's written, grabbed it up. And so I get to follow her here, which is really pretty neat. And she set everything up so nicely for where we want to go today. I find sometimes what she dealt with yesterday, definition of spiritual formation, what does that look like? What does that mean? To be very difficult to talk about. And I think it's for the reasons that she pointed out. There's so many definitions that are not a good one yet. So she's going to get a good one done. The one that she used yesterday, in case you missed her class, the one that she kind of zeroed in on, spiritual formation is a process of growing more aware of God's presence and becoming more like Christ through the Spirit in order to live in right relationship with God, ourselves, and others in every dimension of life. And I feel like when we hear a definition like that and we really start to let it sink in, we want to do different things with our children's ministry. We want to do more for our children. We want to start kind of changing things. And as a young children's minister, when I just first came in, I would hear these ideas. And my first thought was, I've got to go get a new curriculum. There's a curriculum that's going to help me do spiritual formation. And I would go out and research, and I would find ones that I really liked. I settled on one in particular that some of you may love, so I don't want to step on toes, but it ended up not being a great choice for our church because I was trying so hard to change from a education model to a spiritual formation model. I forgot a whole bunch of the stuff in between. And as Marty prepared us to know kind of who our audience is here, she mentioned that a lot of you may be from smaller churches. A lot of you may not have a lot of resources. I'm lucky I have lots of resources. I can change curriculum every so often, and it's not going to really cost us a huge amount of our total budget. But some of you may not have that to give. And so I started thinking, you know, one of the things that we've done in our children's ministry is quit trying to make spiritual formation about our curriculum and start making it about how we've equipped our teachers. Hi, Alan Ritchie. Another mentor back there. And so that little change in itself has helped so much at Kingwood to get us out of trouble of me kind of disrupting the system all the time. Because what our elders and our church members and our ministers who are so versed in the education model, what they are saying to us behind the scenes are statements like this. Some of you probably heard these statements. The elders, When I go into elders meeting, well, what are our kids learning? That's what they want to know. Show me a scope and sequence. Put it on one piece of paper and we're done. That's all we really need to know. Parents, well, have they mastered the Bible? Just like school, have they got it down? You know, before they go to youth ministry, do they know enough so we can baptize them and make them into good Christians by the time they get there? And so these are the bars that we have set, all very educational bars. Ministers, well, we're asking, do they have a heart for God? Well, that can kind of stand in tension with, but we kind of also pour in as much knowledge at the same time, so we kind of already have that tension. Church members, is this ministry active? What do you think that leads up to? Youth groups, how many programs are you doing? Do you have VBS? Do you have camps? Do you have fun days? Do you have all this different stuff going on? So there's some more tension. And, you know, the world's asking, well, are they different because they are Christians? And that's what we want to get to with our kids. We want our kids to know Christ in such a way that they are different than the rest of the world, and that the world can see that in them. And it's a good kind of different, right? Because it's a Christ-like difference. And so that's what we're aiming at. I'm so used to having my clicker. Should have brought that. So David Cenas, I've always said it wrong, and Holly taught me how yesterday, David Cenas, says in, and this is Cenas and Beckwith, quote, says, children's ministry that emphasizes forming disciples of Jesus is about walking alongside children on the path of discipleship, apprenticing them into the way that Jesus laid out for all of us. I love that. I love the idea that we are not called to be teacher-student with our kids. We are called to be mentor-apprentice with the children in our ministries. We're called to walk alongside them. I have kids that are in college that started off in the children's ministry when I first came that are now, well, Sydney, interning for us this summer. We're still walking beside her in ways because of these kinds of relationships. What she learned about the Bible was important, but that relationship she has with the people that taught her is even more important. It's one of our college students is getting to come back, and we're so excited about that. So in our children's ministry, as I started kind of thinking this through, and as I totally blew up a system a few years ago with a curriculum change and had a bunch of people that's like, I'm quitting, I'm not doing this anymore, and elders that were like, why did you cause us all this frustration? And, you know, because you don't want to do that to your elders. I stepped back and I was like, what can we actually do without blowing up a system? And I really think that we can give ourselves language for spiritual formation and activities in our children's ministry for spiritual formation that is totally beyond curriculum changes. And we have to go back to the Bible and we have to start there. Holly said yesterday, start with what they know. And our people know God's word, right? So we start with what they know. Mark 12:30-31. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind and with all your strength. The second is this, love your neighbor as yourself. So in our ministry, we've started to think more deeply about what it means to love God with all of our heart, with all of our soul, with all of our mind, and with all of our strength. And as we've thought more deeply about each one of those, it's led us to think about what things do we do? What activities do we put into our regular programming that allows children to do each of these? And I'm going to unpack that for you because I know that's a little confusing what I just said. But this is our guiding principle. This is what we want for our kids. This is a great way to structure some things. So Cenas says in his book, children's ministry that fits, and a lot of the material kind of from here on out is shaped by this book. So I would suggest if you really like what you hear, pick it up and read it. It's going to give you some good tools, especially at the very end. He says, the different ways in which people experience God can be categorized into four groups or styles of spirituality. Word, emotion, symbol, and action. Okay, word, emotion, symbol, and action. By affirming and embracing all four styles of spirituality, congregations, pastors, teachers, and parents can more effectively nurture the spirituality of the children in their care. This is done through the creation of environments that are harmoniously dissonant, that is, spaces that speak to children in every spiritual style. So set up here, what he did in his research is he looks at these four spiritual styles that I'll unpack for you in a minute, and he goes to churches and he evaluates that church. And he kind of assigns them. Now, he's careful to say in his book, we don't all fit in four little categories. We all know that. We're going to kind of be all over the chart a little bit. But he kind of, you know, this congregation I'm talking to is very much of a mind congregation. And then he starts interviewing children. Are these children, children that learn best, spiritual style best, mind-oriented, or are they heart, or are they soul? And I'll show you in a minute. And so as he did that, he started seeing where congregations are sometimes nurturing the children, and sometimes they're just totally leaving some things out, and people's spirituality is not being nurtured at all. So here's the unpacking of that, I promise. Spiritual styles. Okay, so word, information, thinking, Bible, focused, that was Bible-focused, kind of most of the last 20th century, right? Using mind from the Bible verse for that. Emotion, worship, praise, emotions that feel good. I'm connected to God. I can feel that I'm connected to God. Later half of the 20th century, the presence, pretty much what's driving our churches right now. Symbol, silent, solitude, reflecting on God. Soul, it's the spirit-to-spirit connection that you have with God. A lot of times you don't have that unless you create space for it. So my question will be, do we create space for spirit-to-spirit connection with God for our children and our children's ministries? Sino says, these people are most likely not to fit in most of our congregations. And a lot of times you find these people isolated and checked out and not even attending a church. Because they can't, they're not being nurtured. So they just finally pull out and go nurture themselves. And then action. So service, social justice. I think I lost some words there. Oh, current. That's kind of, you know, our Gen Y group. We're very into social action. So we're starting to really see those conversations rise to the top in some of our churches. So heart. Children will be provided with the opportunity to praise and celebrate God with their whole being. This is our children's ministry philosophy is what I'm giving you. This is what I use at Kingwood Church of Christ. And so this is straight out of my last parents' training. So that's why it sounds like I'm training parents. So our children will be provided with the opportunity to praise and celebrate God with their whole being. Our children will be provided under soul the opportunity to encounter God in silence and solitude. Mind. Our children will learn about God, understanding that the Bible is true, real, and meaningful. Strength. Children will be moved to action to serve the less fortunate and to care for others. Now, I'm curious, how many of you feel like if your church had to predict a predominant style, you feel like your church would predict, would choose heart? Just raise your hand. How many of you feel like your church is a heart, emotion-driven, connect? Okay, couple. What about soul? Your church really does a good job nurturing the soul. Yeah, that was expected. Mind. Your church really nurtures the mind, the intellect. A lot of nods, okay. And strength. Your church really nurtures those that are called to action and provide opportunities. And we get a few more there. I think most of our churches of Christ, in my personal opinion, probably hit these two pretty well. And we're probably struggling up at the top two. And I often think about our worship at our congregation. It's not as much heart-driven as it's still mind-driven. It's all about getting that message across. So even though we're singing songs to get a message across. We're trying to educate. We're still not nurturing the emotion through it. You know, I don't really know when class ends, so you have to watch.
It ends at 3:15.
Okay. So what I want to do is go through each of these with you, and I'll give you a few ideas about how we might use those, but I want this group to brainstorm. So when you leave here today, you have a very practical list of how you might look at this in your ministry. And then I'll tell you at the very end kind of how we set up our ministry around this. I have a chart that I want to show you at the end. So this is a quote from John Westerhoff's book, and it's from the newest edition of the book. So if you're not familiar with him, it's classic. Came out in 1976, I think, is the year I was born. And he was probably the first person, as far as I know, to really call into question the effects of the schooling instructional model. on spiritual formation, on spiritual growth of children, and to say, we're missing it. We're missing it. And the book's saying, you know, we're all children that have faith because we've made it all about school, and it's not that. And so his abridged version or revised version has where he's gone back and he's kind of adjusted a little bit, because the first book really just threw it all out. I mean, that's my take on it. It's let we got to move away from all this schooling stuff. And he comes back and he says, a rational faith requires the acquisition of knowledge and skills. Christians need to know content of Scripture, how to interpret it, and how to make good decisions by it. I kind of paraphrased three paragraphs there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in all of his concerns about school instructional model, he still says 30 years later, a little bit more, that, but we still have to nurture knowledge in our people. You cannot do faith without knowledge. You cannot walk away from that. So we need to be very careful, if we start to think more formatively about our children's ministries, to not throw the baby out with the bathwater. So if our children's ministries are very grounded in getting knowledge across, that's not necessarily a bad thing. But it's got to be balanced. And so that's where I think I made my mistake. I saw that we weren't grounded, so I threw it all out and paused enough work. So this might be what it looks like. This is mine. So we have information thinking, Bible focused. These references, if you want to write them down, it's okay. It's from our children's ministry philosophy. I'm not going to go through that right now. But here's some ideas. Some of this is from Cenos' book, and some of it's just some things I thought of. So, you know, read Bible stories. And I'm an advocate of, when you tell a Bible story in your classes, get the Bible out and read it from the Bible. Let them make that visual connection that the story that you're telling is not just one in your head, but it's in God's timeless word. And I'm actually a little old school about it. Like, I get the Bible out. I don't read it from my iPod or my iPhone or whatever. The kids might do that at home. That's great. I'm not rejecting technology, but I think they need to see that. And I think it's even better if they can get it and they can turn to the Scripture themselves and find it when they're in upper elementary and they can read. Memorize Scriptures. Holly said yesterday that she will never, ever, ever not think that's important. I may not have quoted you right, but I was like, yes, yes, that's so true. We need to keep memorizing Scriptures. We need to create space for that in our children's ministry. It is tricky because we have kids that are not there every week, and we have kids in broken homes, and we don't want to punish children that can't attend often enough. But we want to encourage that in our children. Use Bible facts books. You know, my kids love going to those Bible fact dictionaries and looking stuff up. And what does this mean? And digging deeper. And we're encouraging study skills through that. Play quiz games. That's fine. Churches of Christ, LTC, and Bible Bowl. That might be something at your church. We don't do that anymore. We have some pretty good reasons not to. But that might be something your church does that is mind-oriented. And that's a great thing. So just know that's what you're doing with it. Recall Bible stories. Help them enter into the story. Help them retell the story. Use timelines. We love to show our kids, this is where that happened, and here's where Jesus is, and here's how it's part of God's big story. I have a big one hanging up in our big children's ministry classroom. Study maps and history. I've had some kids, if I pull out a map, I have their undivided attention for the rest of the class. Can't get their attention doing anything else, but a map keeps them pulled in. It's just the funniest thing. What are some things you might do in your classroom that's a mind-orientated, an information, thinking, Bible-focus-orientated activity? That's not on the list, I guess.
Telling a Bible story.
Telling a Bible story.
Acting it out. Mm-hmm. After you've read it, studied it, let them take roles, read their parts. It's very vivid and helps the different learning styles.
Yes, acting it out.
Giving the children an opportunity to take like flannel pieces and tell the story themselves individually, or use that as a character part.
Yeah, I remember like way back when people were like, oh, don't ever use flannel. Flannel's bad. Flannel, you know, just is so dated. Our kids love when we pull out the flannel, and they just think that's so cool that it sticks. And they don't know it's dated. I'm the only one that in the room knows it's dated. They won't figure that out. Just one more. I think, Penny, you had your hand up.
A couple of things we do. One is we have for our elementary kids, but we have classroom Bibles so that we can all be together. So on the same, especially those like second and third graders.
Good.
And we read it together. So we read out loud together different parts of it. We go back and forth. And sometimes I'll read and I'll ask them to join me on certain verses. Because that way, no one knows who's reading well and who isn't. They can join in on whatever part that they can read, but we're all doing it together. And it's wonderful to hear that spoken word and all the little voices. It's just really amazing.
Yes. And I love that idea, having the classroom Bibles. Sometimes we end up with the mix and match Bibles. You know how difficult it is to explain to second graders and third graders why the Bible doesn't say the same thing, but it's always true. And you're children's ministers and leaders, so I'm sure you've had those conversations. So save yourself some steps, I guess. Experience, worship. In our churches, this is from Ivy Beckwith, Formational Children's Ministry. In our churches, we need to expand our view of worship for both children and adults in order to create experiences that are meaningful and worshipful for this generation and the ones that follow. The experience of worship can be a powerful vehicle for spiritual formation as we come to experience God and each other in new and profound ways. The more I work with children, the more I'm convinced that most, at least our church, probably a lot of churches do not have, Churches of Christ, do not have a good theology of what worship should look like. And so our children's ministry tries to copy what our adult ministries do and our big worship's doing, and it's already not connecting with the heart. And then we bring it into the children's ministry level, and they're kind of just lost. And I'm using a curriculum that I really like right now, partially because it's cheap, and it came with good resources, and it's cheap. And the more I use it, the more I'm just like, they spend 60 minutes worth of lesson talking to children. It's like, sing three songs, play a video, which is all talking. And then, I mean, it's like 7 pages of say this to kids. And I'm about to start rewriting it, because for one, it's marketed as a children's worship curriculum. But all they're doing is presenter to teacher for 45 minutes with kids. Do you learn best that way? I don't. So our kids aren't. So we have to really think about, what does it mean to worship? And there's some good books out there. I should have looked up a couple. But if y'all want to email me later, I have them on my shelf. I'll send you some names of some books that really help you get at what does it look like to worship with kids. The heart. So this is worship, praise, and emotion. Here's a few ideas that Sinos gives. Worship songs with movement. Our kids just love, we started adding a few songs that they can get up and they dance with and stuff, and they love it, and they feel so much more connected because of that. Talk about feelings. How did that make you feel? How does that make that person feel in that story? How do you think Jesus was feeling when that happened? Help children enter into the story. So not, don't just give them facts. Again, help them kind of explore. What do you think it felt like when they were doing this, when they were traveling? If you were with Paul, what do you think it would have felt like to be on a missionary journey with him? What do you think it would have felt like to be in a boat and the storm be all around you? What do you think it would have felt like when Jesus calmed the storm? That would have been pretty freaky. You know, how do you think you would feel about that? Use skits, plays, invite children as full participants. So that means not always us presenting, but inviting them to dress up and present. Help children write music, lyrics, poems, all that. Images are powerful. Many of our kids are really wired to receive their messages through images. That same curriculum I was talking about, we joke and laugh, David and I do, at the video that's in it, because we think it's pretty silly. And we're like, why would the kids like this? And this guy's not even that great of a presenter. And last week when we turned it on, they're like, oh, good, we're getting to watch the video. And we're like, we think that's probably the worst part of the curriculum. But the kids love it because they're wired for these images. So even if you're teaching, when I do the little children's worship sermon thing for them, we have the PowerPoint slides that's up there that gives them images to help them remember. We used to do it with flip charts, but they might tune out flip charts a little bit more. What other things would you do to help kids connect with God through their worship, through their heart, through their emotions? What might you do in your classrooms?
We really struggled with this area in our children's ministry, and so we added an art class to our Christmas program,
So kids who did not want to sing could choose to go to a class with a local artist who taught them about the expression of worship through paint and drawing. And it blew us away, the response that the kids had to it. Yeah. It was unreal.
Thank you, Dana. That's good.
Kids all learn in different ways. And one of the paths that we have taken is to try to hit all those different ways. So at least we're hitting the kids, at least one area where they learn well. Some kids learn through their tummies. So we do what we call a food experience, which is something that they do with food. And it has to do with the story. They're creating something out of the story, or it fits into the story somehow. We do a craft room with where they're able to create with their hands. We do a song and game room where we create things with our bodies, and you know, whether it's dancing to music or you know, whatever it is, it all consumes that story that we're doing. And so we rotate through these four rooms of the multimedia with the story, and then those other three rooms. And so at least we hope we're hitting the kids at least in one area. A lot of times you're hitting them in several areas where they learn, where they're going to remember. And one of my kids, I have four, but one of them, I can go back and a month ago, you know, what was this, you know, 4 weeks ago, what was our lesson? And he can tell me everything about that lesson from the food experience. Mm-hmm. Because that's the way, I mean, we're just, it's teaching to him and the way he learns. Now, if I just had him in the music class, he'd be like, oh.
Right. Yeah, and that's, you know, you're getting over into learning styles with that. And it's very important to also remember learning styles as we're remembering how we connect with God spiritually. So important to incorporate a lot of different learning styles in your classrooms. Thank you, Sarah. Thank you. Time for one more? Oh, Pity.
So we've been doing, this kind of fits here, it also fits into the similar soul, but we've been doing, I've been doing a lot with my second and third graders, praying in color.
Yes. Yes.
And also with the movement, some of the books I got from Holly, and we've been doing, because they're simple enough, been doing those with the children, taking them outside.
Yes.
And doing the praying with the whole body.
Yes.
And a lot of those really go along. They go along with our story. I mean, they're connected. It's not just isolated, but they're very connected. But those are very powerful.
Yes. Very powerful. And I'm going to talk about praying in color in just a minute. Praying in color. Mm-hmm. And you can look it up on Amazon. I don't remember who wrote the book. Anybody?
I'll look it up.
Okay. And there's Praying in Color for Kids. The book, it's going to come out of a very different tradition than ours. So we didn't really send the book home with parents. We didn't want to freak them out. But... I'll talk about it in just a minute, actually. I want to get to that on here. Okay, so not just doing good. So this is about strength. Children are spiritually formed through service when a project is bathed in prayerful reflection. When children are able to connect the why of their service with the persons of Jesus, with the person of Jesus, they are being formed into his image. As children and adults serving others in their hurt and pain changes us as much as it changes them. And that's from the new book, Along the Way, that's coming out in probably September is the hope. And I did a chapter in it about mission and compassionate service and proclamation. Just how do we help children engage the hurt and the pain in the world and serve through it? And when I said not just about doing good, one of the things I realized a while back in children's ministry is that so often we give kids service projects, but we fail to connect them to a spiritual reason. We fail to connect them to God. We fail to connect them to the mission of Jesus, that he served others in their hurt and pain. And as he did that, he was able to give them the good news. And so when we fail to do that, we're really not doing Christian service projects. We're doing what the Girl Scouts do. And the Girl Scouts do great things. But we're not the Girl Scouts. So we need to give them more. And one of the things I'll talk about in there that kind of fits under soul, too, is this idea of journey in and journey out. And it's a prayerful reflection
looking inside first, where is God moving me? And as we feel where God's moving us, then we go out and we serve through that. So that way it's connected to the Spirit's movements the whole time. So participate in service projects. That's kind of a given. We do those. Explore the culture and needs in foreign countries. We do a summer of missions every year at our church. Summer missions, summer service, we switch them back and forth. Summer service is local. Summer missions we do overseas. And so we bring in different places each week, a different nation. We explore a missionary that's there. We have somebody that served there in our congregation, short-term or long-term. We explore food or an art or a sport. And we explore the Bible through that. Why do we do missions? And so we give the kids some context about that. That one's neat. I have time for this. Short story about that. I was going to put this picture in, but I didn't have time. And David's been making fun of me about this whole week. But last year during summer of missions, whenever we found out about Dr. Brantley being diagnosed with Ebola, I went into that class, my preschoolers through fifth graders, and explained to them, I have this sort of loose connection even with the Brantleys, that I went to camp with his wife. And so, you know, it's kind of like all in the family, the church family, right? And it's just when you hear somebody that you kind of sort of have known, it's just, wow. And so I went in and I told the kids, I'm like, this is somebody who I went to camp with his wife forever ago. She wouldn't know who I am. But that's okay, because I want us to pray for her husband, because he's serving God in a foreign country, helping people, and he's caught this really bad disease because of it. But God can heal him. But a lot of times people die from this disease, so we've got to pray. And I got to show him pictures. I'm going to cry. And that's not me. But I got to show him pictures yesterday of our little children in their little prayer groups praying. Because when I heard that he was on campus, I thought, if I run into him, I'm going to show him these pictures, because I want the children to hear the end of the story. I want them to know it looped all the way back around. God saved Dr. Brantley, but they were part of it, and he even knows that they were part of it. And so we put that on Facebook yesterday and asked the parents to share that even Dr. Brantley has seen these pictures of these kids praying. That's connecting service with spirituality, because now they can see it. Invite children into a missions committee meeting. You know, how wonderful would it be if your churches would see kids as enough of a participant of your congregation that at some point they would invite the kids in just to hear something about what they struggle with as they're making all those hard decisions, and to hear a child's point of view on it. Because I guarantee what the children are going to say. They're going to say, why can't you do more? Why can't you give money to that? Why can't we organize a project? They will spur us on. And especially our children that's operating out of that spiritual style. Fully engage children in service mission trips to the church. Allow children to wonder about pain, hurt, and God's action in it. So don't be afraid of the hard topics. Pray with children and step out on faith if they bring a project to you. And think deeply about the projects that kids serve in and communicate to them the impact of the gospel. And I probably spent a little too much time on that one because of my chapter, so it's fresh. So one or two ideas, and then we have to get the last one done. One or two things you'd like to add to the list? Yes.
Something I just read in a book that I'm reading right now. I don't remember what it's called. It's called Children's Ministry Guide for Smaller Churches.
Mm-hmm.
Was to get them involved in the places you need volunteers in your church, like setting up the communion, like the person that fills the cups.
Yes.
So, like, have a kid do that. Because I was my husband and I were directing an event recently. A teens area-wide.
Yes.
And I had two little girls helping me put tablecloths on the tables, and was like, you really like doing this. We should do more stuff like this. When I'm like, dang it, nobody will volunteer to, you know, give out these programs. Why don't I just ask a kid to do it? Because they love this.
Yes. Absolutely.
Even in those places where you need volunteers.
There are so many places in our congregations that kids can serve, and that pulls them in and helps them be part of that community, allows us to mentor them, allows them to develop those skills and to emulate us as we're serving. But too often we wanted to shove them off into another room. And we've lost a lot when we do that. I'm going to go on, and then if y'all want to come back to that one, we might have time. Okay, because this one I'll end up probably talking too much about too. Less talk, more silence. Do any of you practice silence in your classrooms in children's ministry? Okay, Sarah and Penny, a couple of you do. Good. It's a scary concept at first, and especially when we look at so many of our curriculum that's out there, it's about keeping them busy the whole time they're in there and entertaining them, right? Suzetta Nutt, in the new book, Along the Way, this is a paragraph from there. It was fascinating. She's talking about how she set up her classroom and gave them times of silence. And when you buy this book, read her chapter first, because it's amazing. It was fascinating to see how silence changed us from the inside out, which is how spiritual transformation works. We began to develop a new language of spiritual formation just from this one change. We talked about the work of being spiritually disciplined, that is difficult and requires regular practice. And practice we did every week. And she talks about how the first time she came in and she challenges them to take just 2 or 3 minutes in silence. And that seemed like such a long time. But before long, they're doing 8 minutes and 10 minutes. On Wednesday nights, I'm in a classroom which is probably spurred a little bit by some things that Suzetta and Dan has told me over the years. And we're using praying with color, third through fifth graders. We're using praying with color. Also soap, which I found on the internet. We added that later, kind of an inductive Bible study. I have to think of scripture, observation, application, and prayer. And so they do some journaling with that. Because what I wanted to do is not teach them facts about God on Wednesday night. I wanted to teach them how to have a spiritual walk that they can live outside the classroom. When you go home, you can have quiet time with God because you've experienced it here and you know how to do that. When you go home, you can read your Bible and study it for yourself because you've experienced it here and you know how to do that. And so starting with praying in color, which simply is just praying and doodling, keeping your mind focused because your hand is doodling. And so our artistic children doodle wonderful pictures that matches their prayers. And our more or less not artistic children might have a bunch of lines on their paper. It doesn't matter. Their hands are busy. They're able to spend more time with God because of that. And so we did the same thing that Suzette is talking about. Last Wednesday night, my kids spent 30 minutes in quiet. I had a raging headache. They had star tests that they had been so anxious about. We came in. I said, what about we just have a good amount of quiet time tonight? Why don't we just go spend time with God? Yes, machine, and that's what we need. We need to spend time with God. They grabbed their journals. They grabbed their bean bags. They spread out all over the room. And for 30 minutes, third through fifth graders sat silently and journaled. And I have pictures of their journals because their journals are amazing when they're done. They're not playing. They're spending that time with God. And so the last 5-10 minutes of class, we came back together and I said, would you like to share anything? This is private, I understand, but if you want to share it, we're welcome that. I would like to hear it. And they love showing me and reading to me what they wrote in their journals during that time and how God was with them. And one of their favorite things to say is, it felt so long. And I'm like, well, what do you mean by that? It feels like we made you be quiet too long? No, it feels like we got to spend a long time with God, and we'd like to spend more time with Him just like that. In our busy, busy world, that leaves such little time for kids to think. We have this space that's been created for silence, and now they know how to go home and do it there. And that's connecting with the soul, the silence, solitude, reflection. Create space for silence. Help children to still their minds, body, soul. Teach children to listen for God. Incorporate Lectio Divina or other methods of meditative prayer. Oh, my kids love it when I do some of that with them, too. And I'm still learning it because it's not Church of Christ language, right? I'm still learning it. But they just love when we do that. And we kind of focus in. Imagine yourself walking in a field with God. Imagine that. Close your eyes. Let the tension out. Now imagine. What would He say to you? What would you say to Him? And then we come back and usually have a time they can share. And they love sharing what that is. And it always blows us away. Spend time in nature. That's mine. That's me. I have an ag degree, undergrad. God is in nature. I see Him everywhere. I just need that outside time. I'd live outside if I could, as long as there was a shower. Develop prayer activities, prayer walks, stations of the cross,
provide art supplies, allow kids to color and create as they absorb God's word. And you can tell, some of these would move back and forth. Some of you mentioned art for worship. Great, it fits there too. So it's not solid.
You can't move things around.
Praying in color is Sybil Macbeth, spelled the Shakespeare way.
And you can even get it on Kindle. That's what I do. Okay, so because I only have 5 minutes, I'm going to finish this up. And if you have questions about the last two, you can grab me in the hallway because I don't want to be rude to the next people. I get to do this so little, I don't manage my time wisely sometimes. Okay, so finally, the first thing you have to do is equip your teachers. So something like what I just showed you guys, you can develop that, you can show it to your teachers, right? That's what I'm kind of doing with our parents right now. Equip your parents so they know what you're doing. And then keep talking about these things. Because what we do often when we try to create any change is we throw the change out there and we're like, look what we're going to do. This is our new vision. And then we walk away from it like everybody just absorbed it and they love it and they own it. And that's really poor change management. If you feel strongly about something, you have to keep revisiting it. You have to keep putting it out there in front of them. You even have to evaluate it and be ready to make tweaks to it if it's not working. Which is the last point, though. Make minor adjustments. Okay, you can tell I'm passionate about that. This is from one of my kids' journals. They actually wanted to create a video for you guys, and we ran out of time for that, and that's okay. But this one was super sweet, so I wanted to end on it. She did this for us about 3 months ago. It says, I love coming to Bible class because I get to learn from my mistakes, and I get to learn more about God and the Bible's Word. I also like that we have journals that we can do and say what we want. Sometimes I wish that we had Bible class every day. I think it's fun to pray in color and use the soap thing. She's very creative. I think this is my favorite Bible class I have ever been to. I also like the teachers I got. They are super nice, and I love the friends I have made. This girl's grown up in our church. What spiritual style do you think she is? This is what spiritual style from this. This is her prayer journal. This is all about the soul. And we have not been nurturing it probably until this year. And now that she's having it nurtured, I cannot miss this class. I guarantee you she misses some of my other classes. I cannot miss this class. And she's probably one of the few that's already doing this on her own at home. Our children's ministry, I can send you this graphic later, but the easy tweak that you can make without having to blow up your children's ministry and change a bunch of curriculum is to look at all the different classes you already offer and ask, if this one is helping, is centered on the mind, then which class could be centered on the soul? And tweak that class. If this one over here, children's worship, is about worship, make it about worship. Don't make it about teaching. Don't make it about service, make it about worship, and do it well. So our children's ministry, this was for my parents, basically it says Sunday morning Bible class is about the mind. Children's worship is about the heart. Wednesday nights is about the soul, unless it's summer. And then summer we do summer service and summer missions. And so we know that we're focusing on all those spiritual styles. You can also do it in your classes. If you're a teacher of a class, a self-contained class, you can split it up. 5 minutes on heart, a few minutes on the mind. Make sure you incorporate some quiet time in your class. Make sure you incorporate a service project here and there and connect it back to God. So you don't have to change everything just to be more spiritually formative. You can make small changes that are intentional and better connect with your kids. And that is right on time. So we will end. Thank you guys for being here. If you have questions, come see me.